And next up on Free Radio 101.1 FM, it's, of course, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm the Robe. Stay with me for my broadsides, and perhaps you can make a few of your own. It's February 2nd, 2006. Yes, that's it. Stay tuned. Welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert North, and stay with us for the next 2 hours, and I will try to stay with you. We're concerned here with civil rights for folks who are like you and me, only poorer, and perhaps even for you and me every so often. You just heard We All Like Parades, songs for Emma, Red Lies, and Black Rhymes. And that's lyrics by Tommy Strange. And some of the lyrics were, in case you missed them, here come the stockbrokers of boredom. They're having a parade, market vampires under parasols, waiting for respect to be paid, the regal walk of ownership, arrogance where it fits, shark tides, snake eyes, arrogance where it fits. Under whose hand does the silver line dollar lie? Slumming it on the weekend, sympathetic rips and jeans, slumming in the mission, Cologne, Maryland's, and rich kid James Dean's, one more kick of culture slap, sobering smack of occupation, pop culture adage, know your station, looks like thuggery and cufflinks, barrio meets the martini nation, that strutting walk of ownership. And that's for all of you who didn't follow the lyrics, as I didn't follow most of the lyrics, but it's an interesting album here. I'm going to be playing some more songs from it. Again, songs for Emma, Red Lies, and Black Rhymes. And this is grouped out of, looks like, Oakland. If you're interested, you can check out, they do a magazine called Rattlesnake. And you can, I guess, you can go to Songs for Emma at Broken Records, R-E-K-I-D-S. So, phone number here, in case you want to call in at 101.1 FM, that's what you're listening to, Pirate Radio Santa Cruz. is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, area code 831. You can also check us out on the Pages in Color chat room, which is another option which few use, but everyone has the option to use. So I notice that I'm all alone in the chat room, but if you want to do some chatting, you just go to pagesincolor.com, click on chat room, write your moniker, and hey, I will be, hopefully, although I often space this out, reading what's happening on the chat room. You may also be interested in leaving a message off air. You can do that by calling the Huff line. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and appropriately enough, it's 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. Huff is a civil rights organization for housed and homeless people. We meet every Wednesday. Now moved our time to 9:30 in the morning for all you late risers. We're at the county building, actually in the breezeway between the county building and the courthouse in that atrium area, right outside the metal detector, right next to the coffee cart, right next to that big hole. You can look down and see the garage underneath, so those police cars bringing in the criminals and getting them ready for court in their nice pink jumpsuits, orange jumpsuits. Some of them are pink. Some of them are green. I can't quite keep track of what that's all about, but there it is. And that's the Huff meeting on Wednesdays, 9:30 to 11:30. You can also call the Huff hotline at 423-HUFF. And if you want to help out, just offer. Say, I got some time. I want to help. Or I need help. You know, what can you help me with? Though that's a little more problematic for us since our resources are pretty slim. You can also go to the Huff website where these shows are archived. Actually, you can hear them afterward if you are glutton for punishment, or maybe, you know, you've got some something you actually want to listen to again to clarify or to criticize or to praise. Who knows? It's the Huff website at huffsantacruz.org. Also, I note Indie Media has moved. It is now San Francisco Bay Area Indie Media, and it is at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, actually. And it's looks like a nice website. It's all green and white as I look at it. It's got ACLU of Northern California seeks Pentagon files on peace groups at UCSC and elsewhere. Talks with Jerry, who's the farmer at the farmer's market. UC students demand answers about the spying scandal. Council votes to do nothing about the spying scandal again. I notice it doesn't have the number of posts immediately posted on it, but it does have, you can click on the story. And you can go to, actually kind of sends you to the old Santa Cruz Indie Media site. And actually, the original story is there, but none of the comments. That's too bad. My fine comments seem to have been deleted. Goodness, I don't know what this is all about. Maybe they have cut back on some of the comments because they don't have the web space. If so, ain't it a pity. Yeah, it looks like all the stories are now lacking the comments, or maybe I'm just not sure how to access the comments as I look at the new Indie Bay site. Although I like this website in spite of the fact that they have in the past censored one of the best writers on homeless issues in the county, Becky Johnson, who's been fighting for civil rights for homeless people for years and produces my show here. So we'll see what happens with this website. It looks like the new, this website does not have comments attached, or at least not obviously. Yeah, there's no clear commentary, interestingly enough. Maybe that is yet to come, or maybe, who knows what's happening. Maybe somebody from Indie Media, maybe I'll call old Joe Williams and ask his opinion. He's a, at least he was part of the old Indie Media Collective. Maybe they're still, he's still part of that group. Or if any Indie Media Collective members are listening, maybe they can advise us as to what's happened to all the comments on the most recent stories on Indie Media. And the reason I mention that, of course, is because my stuff is being cut off here, but also because the some of the issues I talk about on the air, for example, the Downtown Commission/City Council's latest anti-homeless law, the don't linger in the parking lots and garages for more than 10 minutes law, another one of their preposterous give the police incredible powers and then, of course, let the police ignore it with the middle class and enforce it with the people they wish to enforce it against, poor people, musicians that they have heard complaints from merchants about, even if the complaints may not stand up in court, homeless folks who might otherwise be considered innocent, but merchants just want to see less of downtown, that sort of thing. Anyway, so a lot of those stories have been on the Indie Media website, not just stories, but very interesting commentary back and forth, both critical and supportive, and I think it's too bad if that commentary has disappeared, so I'm going to try to find out what is cooking here. Coming up on the show today, a number of things. Rico Thunder, one of the main men behind the last night do-it-yourself parade, which, of course, earned the very intense interest of our local Santa Cruz Police Department. They spied on it. They sent infiltrators to its organizing meeting. They even offered to take tasks, which they didn't do. And then they were the subject of a Public Records Act request by the American Civil Liberties Union, not of our local ACLU. They wouldn't be caught dead on a local issue challenging the mayor and former mayor, Mike Rotkin, who is also on the board of directors of the American Civil Liberties Union. No, none of that stuff. But the ACLU of Northern California up in San Francisco apparently took this request, went forward with it, and it's been posted somewhat on the Internet on Indie Bay, or at least that's what Rico told me. I guess I better double-check on that story, too, and see where we're at with the... Let's see here... Going to Indie Bay again and looking for the latest postings on the key documents. Here we go. Indeed, they're listed on the side. And there's a picture of Tony Madrigal looking, I would say I was looking. He was a fellow introduced, council member introduced the resolution to have... an independent investigation, except he failed to make it independent of the city manager, which might have been difficult to do anyway, but I think it's important to make it clear the city manager appointed the police chief, and the city manager has quashed such investigations of the police department in the past. So Tony, who was on the Citizens Police Review Board before it got aborted by the city council, most of the current city council voted to kill it, he was on that board, and so he should know better. He apparently doesn't know better. And I'm looking at the documents. Where are these key documents? All right, now here are the key documents. They're available in PDF form on this website, and there's... here we go. We can download the PDF. I'm going to see how it works. Looks like it is downloading, and here it is. Actually, I printed this out the other day for the Huff meeting. Thank you, Rico Thunder. Thank you, ACLU. A lot of this stuff we've seen before and we've heard referred to. We did an interview with Rico on Sunday? Or actually, I did it on last Tuesday, a week ago Tuesday, at the city council meeting. And I played it on, I believe, on Thursday, last Thursday, a week ago. Or maybe I played it on Sunday. And he referred to a number of these documents. He mentions a number of things that were missing to Mark Schlossberg, who's the ACLU guy who filed the request and apparently has filed a second request around the issue of SCPD surveillance of peaceful political groups in Santa Cruz. So here's what he has not gotten in the first packet, which he now wants, and he itemizes it. Any information of surveillance or intelligence gathering of any political group in the last 3 years, as requested by Sherry Connable, and referenced in an email re-anti-corporate Christmas caroling from Lieutenant Rudy Escalante to Lieutenant McMahon, Kurt Vogel, Deputy Vice Chief, M. Sanders, El Sepulveda on the 17th of December. So they have been spying, they have been referring to it, but they just couldn't bring themselves to give those documents. Well, this is the second request for the documents. Two, any evidence of policy regarding undercover or plainclothes officers as requested by Mark Schlossberg. Note, undercover officers are not confidential informants, which apparently they riffed on but didn't get back to the undercover officers. Three, any evidence of where police procedure and protection of civil liberties intersect, as requested by Schlossberg, and again apparently ignored by the SCPD. Any information, four, regarding contact with outside state or federal agencies, that is to say, who's helping in this spy on peaceful groups effort by our great libertarian police force, also as overseen by City Manager for Life Dick Wilson and new mayor Cynthia Two-Minute Matthews, as we now call her, for only allowing 2 minutes to critics while she allows 3 and 5 minutes to merchant supporters at city council meetings when they wish to speak in the public comment period. Five, the OIC report from the infiltrated meeting, I guess that's the police report, October 19th, the OIC report from the infiltrated meeting December 29th, again, a police report. The operations order resurveillance referenced in an email from Escalante to Vogel on the 29th of October. Printouts of the website from December 14th, reference from McMahon to Vogel on the 14th of December. Complete email collection of Vice Chief or Deputy Chief Vogel's re-parade and surveillance. So what's happening here is a number of documents mentioned in the police stuff that came back to the public and to RICO Thunder and to the ACLU, and hopefully now most of which is posted, or the key parts of which are posted on the Indie Media or Indie Bay website, are now being used by the ACLU, by RICO, to really get at key documents that have been ignored or perhaps even shredded by this time. We're not sure. Complete email collection of R. Escalante, re-parade and surveillance, reference numerous email. Complete email collection of U.C. Carter Jones and Officer Hansen, re-surveillance. Complete email collection of Lisa Pulveda, re-parade and surveillance. Complete email collection of M. Sanders, re-parade and surveillance. Complete email collections of Howard Scarry, that's the police chief, re-parade and surveillance. Any emails to or from Vice Chief Vogel preceding October 27th. Email reply to City Council member Cynthia Matthews. It's important to know, since she's now the mayor, and this apparently happened way back on the 13th of December. Actually, she was the mayor back then, too. Confidential notes of Carter Jones moved to the personal drive. Apparently, there was some, either a memo or an email that mentioned move your shit to the personal drive, buddy. Didn't use those words, but said to the cop, get it off the public drive so we don't have to, you know, let it be known what's going on. Discussion about personal info of Wesley Modes, that's RICO Thunder's more conventional name, and Christine Bouchard. Any follow-up on crime case against Wesley Modes filed by Escalante? And RICO writes, my general feeling is we got a cursory at best review of the documents they have. I would not even call this an attempt at due diligence. I'm no expert, and there are glaring holes. So just to keep myself focused, here's why I think it matters. I want to know, one, how extensive is police spying? Two, what controls they have on surveillance? Three, if our local PD worked with state or federal agencies? Four, how much or how little they view the importance of privacy and civil liberties of citizens? And five, how much effort, time, and money they spent on their ridiculous paranoia? And the reason why this is important is because this, in these documents, in these efforts by citizens like RICO Thunder, possibly by like Huff members who are seeking to get public documents around the don't loiter for more than 10 minutes in a public garage or parking lot, you know, kiss food not bombs goodbye on Wednesday afternoons, folks. They linger for far more than 10 minutes. This is where we get our information. There's supposedly to be a meeting of the City Council's Public Safety Committee, which is what we have instead of an independent Citizens Police Review Board, headed by that old independent watchdog of the police, Mike Rotkin, former mayor and the guy who didn't want to bother to investigate tasering, didn't want to bother to give any information about which SCPD officers assaulted members of the Tent University way back on April 19th, 20th, that evening last year when there was a real exercise in direct Tiananmen Square-type democracy here in our own community. That's the guy who heads the Public Safety Committee. I believe it's Rotkin. Now, I know he's on it. He may not head it. I think he probably does. Other members are Ryan, just a businessman and lawyer, Coonerty, son of Neil Coonerty, and, of course, Ed, I gave you the downtown ordinances, and I trust our police chief, Howard Scarry Porter. He's the guy who suggested that I was really out of line by calling Police Chief Scarry a liar at the city council meeting several weeks back in response to Scarry's reported statement that this was a unique incident of police surveillance on New Year's Eve, that it didn't happen otherwise, when in fact, of course, there has been undercover surveillance repeatedly and reportedly throughout the year. We have a caller. Let's see what the caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert.
This must be the notorious communist dupe and anarchist dog, Rico Thunder.
That would be me, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Well, welcome to Free Radio, and have you been listening, or?
I have not been.
Okay,
into the house.
Oh, well, let me brief you then. I've just read from you in detail, and probably boring detail for some, things missing from the Public Records Act request fulfillment that you posted on Indie Bay.
Oh, that's a fine document full of 19 points, no less.
Yes, indeed. And some of it's a little...
I feel sorry for your listeners.
I'm glad for the thoroughness of you and Schlossberg, if he's ever able to successfully do that. Has a second Records Act request been actually made at this point?
It's been made, but not mailed.
Made but not mailed.
On my computer, waiting for my thumbs up, and then Mark Mark S.
Let's call
Mark
him.
Mark S. Just pushes. He pushes the button.
Excellent. So you're actually waiting for someone to donate the postage on this particular.
Exactly, and that'll actually exceed our costs putting on the last night DIY parade.
Well, you know, it was a very. I hear the parade was very entertaining. I was out of town at the time, but I think an even more amusing episode happened, yesterday morning when the man in charge of the spy operation investigated himself and called you in for testimony. Deputy Chief Kurt Vogel, right?
Kevin,
thank you. I was Kurt.
Yeah, we're on first name basis now.
Excellent. It is Kevin. I actually know Kevin too. I kind of like the guy, and I kind of. He's gotten chunkier and, I think, more...
humane?
Corrupt over the years.
Corrupt and humane. Yeah,
well,
take him off the street.
I regard surveillance as a form of corruption in this situation, and if he's responsible, I'm afraid I have to call him corrupt. But who knows? Maybe they're forcing him to do it with threats against his family. You know, he never could.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of thinking it was one of those, like, seemed like a good idea at the time. One of the questions I asked him was, do you have any regrets? And to that he answered, I can't really talk about that while there's an internal investigation in progress.
I see. So in other words, he's investigating himself, and when it's over, he'll give you his own rendition of what he thinks about whether he was regretful or not.
He is. The only reason I agreed to talk to him was because I figured that it would be my one and only opportunity to ask him a bunch of questions. And so I did.
And did you record this on tape?
No, I didn't. You know, I had a little mini disc recorder there, and my journalistic impulse to listen to make sure that I was recording something, I let it go, and I didn't record a thing.
Oh, what a bummer. What a bummer. That can happen. I know that does happen. That's what Lieutenant Clark claims happened to my tape. He claims that it was all blank after a certain point, and we're still trying to get access to the original tape of my arrest way back in June of last year.
17 minutes?
It was, who knows? Maybe Rosemary Woods was involved here somewhere. An attorney is coming down from Berkeley tomorrow to prepare what's called a motion to compel, because my district attorney, the guy who's prosecuting me for disrupting a council meeting and resisting arrest, is refusing to let me hear or see the tape. He says he will allow an attorney to look at it, but not me. And, of course, the attorney wouldn't know what to look for in terms of what should and shouldn't be on the tape. So we're going to see what happens with that motion to compel. But here you are actually in a much more – this is a much broader and in many respects more important subject than my prosecution. Are you still being prosecuted yourself? What's happening with you?
What's that?
I see a case against you referenced in this document. Is there a criminal charge against you?
Well, that was actually the first question I asked him because, you know, here I am. I'm sitting in a – I couldn't round up an attorney on the sort of last minute. I was able to round up a journalist, which I guess if you can't find an attorney, you can always bring in a journalist. So Sarah Phelan from the Metro was kind enough to accompany me.
Very good.
Laborious notes. And first off, she showed up and said, do you mind if I go along? And he said, well, I'd feel a little bit more comfortable if it was just him and I and my tape recorder. And I said, well, I'd feel more comfortable if it was all of us. And he said, well, you know, if it's okay with you, just us. And I said, well, it's actually not, and I'd love to have Sarah come along. So he relented, much to our surprise, and let her join us.
Well, but it would have been embarrassing for him not to, because she would have written about that.
Exactly. I would have loved to have a lawyer go with me, but all the local lawyers on the side of good rather than evil were busy that day.
They often are, you know.
Yeah, there's lots of evil to be fought. But first question I asked, of course, was, is this part of the internal affairs investigation? Because I kind of half thought it was just his own little hobby to see what dirt he could get on me. But he did not seem to have as nefarious intentions. Next question I asked is, am I the subject of further investigation? Which would have been like, you know, anything other than a resounding no would have been like, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya.
Right.
Here.
right.
He said no, without qualification. It was not part of a further investigation.
And, of course, we know he wouldn't be lying to you, certainly.
No, naturally, he wouldn't be lying. Or if something turned up later that they needed to investigate, of course, the tape would still be used. But I'm close enough to the... this situation, I kind of know what to say and what not to say.
Huh. Of course, it's too bad you don't have a copy of the tape, because then you could present it publicly. But you did take it. Extensive notes or some notes.
I took extensive notes, but also remember that these are ostensibly the people's police, and what they do on the job is part of the public record. And
actually, it's not. The IA report will be confidential. It won't be public, and at least it never has been in the past. And there's a state law that the police department tends to start screaming about whenever people start saying, let's open up these records. Oh, it's just personnel,
laws are very, very important, Robert, to police when they benefit them.
Well, laws are very important to all of us, particularly when peaceful groups are being spied upon by men with guns, radios, and lots of money.
So my next question to him was... what part do you play in the internal affairs investigation, expecting him to say, well, I've been asked to investigate this portion, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
His answer was he's heading it.
Indeed.
So he's heading the internal affairs investigation of what appears from email that he at least first suggested, and he addressed that very issue. My next question was to him is, did you play any part in the decision to send undercover officers to the meeting? And his comment was, I only suggested having undercover officers to Rudy, and he just kind of ran with it. So I think that email, he said to me, I think that email you saw was on a Thursday or Friday, and I didn't see the report until I came in on Monday. So apparently this is going to be the cycle. This is sort of like the Lindy England of Santa Cruz here. It's just each person is just going to point their finger downward and say, you know, it wasn't really my idea. It was the idea of this person who works for me, below me.
Well, I think that, we don't want to, sully the reputation of the men and women in charge of our internal security apparatus here.
So I think that it would be interesting to get comments from Rudy, Rudy Escalante, to find out, how he feels about his boss saying, well, I just suggested it. It's really Rudy who ran with it.
Probably need a civil lawsuit to really get these characters, kind of get the rats to come out from under the table, so to speak.
So I asked him, do you think it's odd? I mean, does it feel odd to you that you're involved in the decision and leading the investigation? His answer, no, I trust I can be objective in this.
He's got a lot of confidence in him, so that's what you need, a police officer with confidence.
Confidence and confidence.
In confidence, of course.
And I already told you I asked him if he had any regrets.
Right.
I also asked him, what other events or community or political groups have you monitored? He said none.
Did you ask him how many he was aware of that had been monitored?
No, I don't think I... My question was phrased in such a way that I didn't think there was much weasel room. But he said that... So I said, if this is the only group that's been monitored in, say, the last 3 years, does that mean that the parade was the biggest threat to, Santa Cruz in those 3 years? He laughed and said, no, it wasn't. But for him, it was a public safety issue. And so, nobody wanted to get anybody run over, and they have a history of violence on big holidays.
So and naturally, so, they had to make sure that they had to infiltrate the parade in order to assure the traffic safety. I see.
So they say.
Interesting. Yeah.
It's the same thing. It addresses that same comment that Mike Rodkin made quite a while back, maybe a couple of weeks ago. He said you have to. He said at the council meeting, you have to understand that the police had an interest in this. And the comment from my wife was, well, they might have an interest in whether I'm doing illegal things in my home, but that doesn't give them the right to walk in.
Hmm.
So an interest does not, even a compelling interest, doesn't give them the right to bust in on just anything.
Very interesting.
He had comments about the parade itself, which he was either, I think, expressing surprise or maybe he was just kissing my ass. But he said, I think the parade went very smoothly. He said he was driving down the street in an unmarked car but in uniform the night of the parade. And he said people were lining the streets just like any other parade night. And he said he had his windows down and he could hear people asking, when is the parade going to start? So I think in spite of everything that went on, I think that the police were ultimately rather surprised and pleased by the parade.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I imagine so. How long did the whole interview take?
It was about 20 minutes. So that was, I've just told you about my section. He asked me a bunch of questions, too.
What kind of questions did he ask?
I'll give you a quick rundown. He asked, give me a narrative of how you promoted the parade and the officers at the, how the officers at the meeting behaved. He asked, what would you have done if we attended the meeting in uniform? I told him we would have politely declined, and they're welcome to talk to us by email or phone. He said, would you have told us your plans if we called or emailed? And I said, sure. We had nothing to hide. He asked some more questions about the detail of the behavior of the undercover officers in the last night parade meetings. And while I did tell him, just to clarify, that they weren't just observing, because they were there and they were taking on significant commitments and helping set time, date, and place of following meetings, I told him that the issue wasn't so much the undercover officers and how they behaved in the meeting. The issue was the decision to send undercover officers into the meeting.
What was his response?
Questions about how people knew that the undercover officers were undercover officers. I said we suspected, plus they gave bogus email addresses and phone numbers. Plus it was confirmed by Rudy Escalante and the Sentinel.
So you're actually kind of serving as a training ground for the police in improving their surveillance techniques. Eh?
Well, I wondered about that. I didn't want to give them too many details, and I didn't. He asked at one point, "So did everybody know that they were police?" And I said, "No, no, no. Just a few people suspected," which was true enough. Actually.
You didn't tell him which men you had inside the police department who were your double agents, right?
No. He didn't actually ask about that, which surprised me. I thought that for sure he'd ask about our internal source. But he
because, in fact, there was an internal source that said there's spying going on.
Counter surveillance, as it were.
Yes.
So he asked an interesting question. He said, how would the group have responded if we tried to stop the parade, if we decided to that people were parading without a permit and we needed to arrest everybody? My answer, that's speculation. I can't talk about that.
I don't think you would really know how people would respond. You guys, did you discuss a response if they stopped the parade?
No. Yeah, we did, actually. We did discuss a response.
You wish to reveal your conspiracy to violate the law here on free radio?
I think I'd rather not, simply because I think that it could be used as... I mean, we didn't plan to, you know, then we got our shields! No, but at the same time, I don't want to give them fuel to say, see... And that's precisely why we need to infiltrate the parade. Those radical anarchists would have bowled us over.
Well, I think
with
another
their
way,
rhetoric.
Right, well, another way of looking at it would be that the ordinance under which they're demanding a permit is unconstitutional, and the process by which they're surveilling us is unconstitutional, and we would simply be upholding our constitutional rights in a peaceful manner, and in whatever way seemed appropriate at the time. I mean, if the police tried to arrest you, obviously each individual would make his own decision whether to, submit to arrest, or to go into a civil disobedience mode, or to start singing loudly or take off their clothes and start capering around, whatever they would do, in order to, further First Amendment goals. Because
I think you're right about it being individual choice. authoritarian organizations have an incredibly tough time trying to understand both the structure and the decision-making processes of anti-authoritarian groups. So, for instance, he'd say, you know, what would your parade have done? And it's like, well, if I had a parade, I don't know what my parade would have done, but the parade that we were actually part of, that was the community's parade and full of all sorts of people doing all sorts of things, I couldn't even begin to speculate.
Right.
So another question he asked that was a sort of a twitchy subject was, tell me about the meeting on December 29th in which the officers were photographed. My answer to that was, I can't talk about that.
Uh-huh. Because you didn't wish to, you were afraid that, that photographing officers was somehow illegal, or that the people who photographed would be considered to be criminals. It seems to me that people who present themselves in a place with no expectation of privacy, like a meeting, a, quote, public meeting, I'm not sure how public your meeting was, that's a source of some controversy, I guess, can't expect not to be photographed.
Yeah, I think that is also true. Knowing your rights. And dealing with cop interrogation kind of comes down to one thing, is that in almost every situation, it is almost never a good idea to talk to cops.
Yeah.
They don't always and don't often or don't usually have your best interest in mind.
Particularly if surveillance has become the norm and an accepted practice, as seems to be the case in Santa Cruz. I notice that already we have a problem because Vogel, like his superior, Scary, seems to be denying that there has been any other surveillance of any other peaceful groups. Isn't that your impression? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, no. Without any qualifications, he said absolutely not. His answer was absolutely not. This was all internal. We've monitored no other groups. There was some photos that were circulated at a city council meeting by an indie media reporter. And he commented on those and said that those were UC police, which is interesting because the UC police were just recently saying that they haven't spied on anybody either. So
right. Now have you examined those documents presented by the Indy Media reporter?
I have. I can't tell from the photograph, but my guess is that it's one or two different. It's a photograph of only a few Indy Media photographers. It wouldn't be hard to look at a high-res photo and find out who it was.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the basis on which I made the statement at City Council that Scary was a liar. That is to say that he claimed this was the only case of political surveillance.
I think he may well be a liar, intentionally or unintentionally. Whether that is the actual basis of his lie or not, I don't know.
I mean, if I find out that none of those photos depict SCPD officers, I will make a public apology to Scary and say that you may in fact be a liar. But I have no evidence at the moment that you are, and I'll apologize up to that point. You know, I mean, I think the real issue here, and which, you know, is being ignored, and perhaps not really by Sarah, because at least she's there taking notes. Sarah used to be quite an active reporter like 4 or 5 years ago and then became a fluffer for many years, in my view. But I'm glad she's getting back on the local beat. Apparently, you know, if there's enough heat and enough light, then she once more turns to proper role of the reporter.
Well, it's a little depressing, actually, that the best expose of this incident has been written by the Metro News.
That is Sarah, right?
Yeah, that is Sarah, and the Sentinel has passed it by. You know, they've written sort of like news from a mainstream journalist point of view is when somebody in an important office does or says something. It is not news when the people do or say something until an official makes a comment about people doing things. Then it's news again. So every time a councilman sneezes, they're willing to write at least something in coastlines. But, you know, if we throw a parade, it's not news, and it was not covered by the Sentinel.
By the way, I want to announce that I'm talking to Rico Thunder about the New Year's Eve last night DIY police surveillance issue, which has really been a hot topic, at least among some of us. And if people have questions they want to ask him, there is another line. I'm going to give out that number. You can call that number if you've got a question or comment. Rico, you got a few minutes or not? How
sure,
you doing?
Yeah.
The phone line is...
Time to burn.
What's that?
Time to burn.
Indeed. Excellent. 469-3119. Again, 469-3119. 469-3119. Give a call if you got a question for Rico here or a comment on you know, the whole issue of police surveillance. There is a meeting, as I mentioned before, the Public Safety Subcommittee, which is Porter, Rotkin, and Coonerty, coming up on the 13th. I've kind of already indicated my skepticism about this city council committee. All of these people voted against any kind of public investigation. It's a city manager, an independent investigation, so it wouldn't be a public investigation. But the results would probably be public. At least the only other public investigation that's ever been done in Santa Cruz was that of the 1999 police abuses against people who were protesting the Clinton bombing of Yugoslavia in the spring of 99. And that was done by an independent investigator appointed by the city manager at the request of the then, somewhat liberal Citizens Police Review Board. And that report was finally made public. And actually, one of the chief police officers, Officer David Lefebvre, who later resigned from the force, was found guilty of excessive force not in the internal investigation by the police department, but by the investigation by the independent investigator, and actually it may have also been by the internal investigation.
Robert, do you want me to give your listeners a quickie rundown if they're just stumbling upon this?
Please.
Scandal, I guess we could
Please
call
do. We're talking with Rico Thunder. Go ahead, Rico.
Okay, so the last night DIY parade was a parade that a bunch of folks from the community came together to plan for as a replacement for first night. We weren't going to ask for permits due to the unreasonable barrier to free speech represented by the $1 million bond, they can, as well as consideration for yada yada, a million different things. But the upshot is that hosting a parade can cost from $1,000 to $5,000. Our budget was essentially zero to make this happen. We did pull it off on New Year's, and it was beautiful and filled the streets, and everybody was pleased, and there were no untoward incidents, no bricks through windows. Everybody was happy about that. No run-ins with cops. But what we discovered in the process is that we started having meetings back in October, spreading flyers way back in September. And we found that our first meeting, we had a diverse group of people. And among the diversity there, all, of course, white, Santa Cruz diverse, we had two surfer dudes who gave bogus emails and then showed up at a later meeting and gave bogus emails and bogus phone numbers and bogus names. We started to get a little interested and concerned, and so we made some discreet inquiries and found that, lo and behold, we had two undercover officers who were attending our meetings. And we went to the press about it and organized a meeting where we could photograph them. They were photographed by indie media photographers. And the press came out with a story the day of the parade, the 31st. And we didn't know whether it would do harm or good. We kind of hoped it would come out on the 1st, but it came out on the 31st. And the result was that I think the police just kind of backed off. They really didn't interfere with the parade one way or another, and it went smoothly and beautifully.
There was a threat at one point that because you didn't have a permit, the parade might be stopped, right?
No, there was zero contact whatsoever from the police. Zero. They did not email us. They did not call us. They did not post anything officially.
Right, but they did make comments to the media that this would be an option they had, I believe.
Oh, well, it's always an option. They have to control everybody's life. I think that might have been in that December 31st article. There's been sort of a nonstop stream of bullshit from both the city council and from the police department regarding, their public stance about this. But so I haven't paid a heck of a lot of attention.
But on the other hand, others may have. Have you ever do an analysis of the kind of media double talk and city council double talk? I'd like you to make that available to us, because I think that's very important, because people tend to believe what they read, some of us.
Oh, absolutely. So, when Mike Rotkin says, if there is a, who said, Scary said? I think Chief Scary said, if there is a public meeting about a public event on a public street, we'll be there. So, even if you think it's a private meet, even if you think that it's in your private home and that cops are not welcome, they may well be there, and so they've stated their intention.
But only to protect the interests of against
public
terrorist
safety.
Activity like yourselves.
Public safety, blah, blah, blah. So many people, almost 70 or 80 people, showed up at the next city council meeting to express their dismay, outrage, surprise, at the police infiltration of the planning group on the Tuesday following the 1st. I don't know what date that was.
How many people would you estimate actually showed up?
70 was what I heard from both mainstream and indie media sources. So,
and you were there, so you did see the crowd.
I was there, but didn't have my clicker. I didn't count.
And it was overflow into the outside, and there were speakers set up outside?
Yeah,
or?
And I won't get into the minutiae and machinations of the council regarding, you know, for those who've never been to a council meeting, there is a an oral communications portion of any public meeting where you, as the public, have the option to come down to the meeting and express whatever it is. And part of the job of the council is to listen intently, but not to actually comment or necessarily to do anything about it at that time. But they're obligated to hear you because it's a public meeting, and you're the public, and they're your public servants, right? So ostensibly, your representatives. People made their public comments, and basically, you know, between two mayors and a bunch of outraged activists and a bunch of ordinary citizens and some people who'd escaped from Czechoslovakia and communist Russia, a lot of people said, this is a very nefarious chilling of free speech and slide into a police state. Nobody was happy about it. So the council decided very much with great decisiveness to do nothing and to not really make any comments at all. There were several articles written about it. At some point, Tony Madrigal, one of the council members, decided to call for an independent investigation because there was an internal investigation already happening. People had their doubts about whether it was going to be objective.
Wait a minute. With Kevin Vogel on the job, how could you suggest it wouldn't be?
No. Understand, Robert, I'm not suggesting that. I've talked to the man. I know he's capable of being objective about investigating himself. But others, like our council member Madrigal.
Well, you know, this reminds me of National Lampoon's characterization of Watergate. I don't know if you ever heard their record. They had there's a guy called L. Patrick Gray who headed the FBI. He was appointed by Nixon. And there was a part of the record that went like this. This is L. Patrick Gray of the FBI. I know I'm in there. If I don't come out in 5 minutes with my hands up, I'm coming in to get me. So, go ahead.
It wasn't unlike that, actually, talking to him. So the vote of Tony Madrigal for an independent investigation went down in flames, 5-2. There's a great deal of machination and political backstabbing and corruption. And I don't say that lightly. I've been involved as a board member of nonprofits and involved in some degree of local government, and I don't think I've ever seen a more corrupt meeting take place where Mike Rodkin and Cynthia Matthews clearly arranged a deep six Tony Madrigal's proposal for an independent investigation.
Can you describe this process? I mean, I know we haven't mentioned the fact that at the January 10th meeting, which was the first meeting where this came up with 70 people in the audience or more, you guys were given 2 minutes each.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to get too into I would definitely suggest going down there to watch it. I mean, instead of getting our blow-by-blow, it is worth watching. It's like they say about, you know, politics and sausage-making. You just don't want to see it made.
They also played the tape on this show. If people want to go back, they can check it out on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. You can listen to the last couple of shows, and you can hear the city council's some of what they have to say. They actually went on for an hour on January 24th, the last council meeting, where you say there was a lot of corruption. That's a word I wouldn't use, corruption, but, I mean, maybe you have a different sense of it and a better sense of it than I do. Why do you call the way in which the council disposed of Madrigal's, frankly, what I regarded as a weak resolution to send to ask Dick Wilson, who appointed Chief Howard Sperry?
I mean, it was weak, and there was perhaps a little bit of political opportunism there on the part of Tony Madrigal.
A little
maybe
bit, yeah.
Maybe his heart's in the right place. I don't know.
But why would that be? Why would you characterize? I mean, even that resolution obviously was a step forward from Kevin Vogel's investigating himself, as he's now doing. But
so the reason I'd say corrupt is because there's a you elect your representatives or don't with the idea, or they just do their thing, and you have this idea that they at least give thought and hear arguments and then make, you know, good or bad decisions, but in doing, they have an opportunity to be informed. In the case of the council meeting on the 27th or 29th, Mike Rodkin made a counter motion while another motion was on the table. I don't know if that's according to parliamentary form that you can have two motions going at one time. Mike Rodkin made this sort of labyrinthian proposal that several of the council members had no idea what he was saying or doing. There were several clarifying questions, and in the middle of the clarifications, Cynthia Matthews cuts off communication and calls for the vote. Several of the council members objected, saying that they were still discussing it and didn't quite understand it. Mike Rodkin says, point of order, point of order. You can't, once the council member or once the chairman calls for a vote, you can't still continue to discuss it. And so he said, Tim Fitzmaurice said, well, I was still just asking some questions. And Mike Rodkin says, point of order. Once someone raises a point of order, you can only address the point of order. You can't still keep discussing whatever it was you were discussing. And it went on like that. And so basically the mayor called for a vote before there was adequate understanding of what they were voting for. Several of the council members looked to the more senior council members to see how they were voting. They voted. There was a little bit of hemming and hawing, and they voted yes on Mike Rodkin's, which essentially made Tony Madrigal's noble yet weak proposal go down in flames.
Also, I would note that, you know, part of the resolution was that it couldn't be reversed. That is to say,
right.
There couldn't be another opportunity to change it. And Rodkin went through this elaborate explanation. Oh, that would be counter to the whole process if you could actually have a resolution which would reverse it later.
Right. So Tim Fitzmaurice said, well, I understand what you're saying, but perhaps I can suggest we strike the part about it not being reversed so that we can change our minds later. Mike Rodkin, point of order, point of order. You can't suggest an amendment to a motion that goes against the very heart of the motion, which I didn't think was the heart of the motion, but if it was the heart of the motion, then what...
The cover-up has to hold. That's the heart of the motion.
So what Mike Rodkin was suggesting, if that was the heart of the matter, was that not only should they not call for an independent investigation, but it is not reversible. It goes until the internal investigation is finished. So... We had our doubts about this internal investigation, which were further confirmed by getting a certified letter by several people got certified letters from Kevin Vogel, inviting them to be interviewed regarding the internal investigation. And then in an interview with him, he answered my question about what part he played in the internal investigation. And he is heading it. Sort of during this whole thing, we contacted the ACLU of Northern California, since we didn't expect our local ACLU to do anything, considering that Mike Rodkin is one of the directors of it. And so, or I hear that Mike Rodkin is one of the heads of the ACLU, but perhaps it's not the same ACLU that has the word civil liberties in it. I'm not sure.
Mm. Unfortunately, I'm afraid it is the same.
So... the ACLU of Northern California filed a Public Records Act request and received in response within pretty timely manner over 200 documents, largely filled with fluff, but with a few interesting things in it. One of the emails that was in the document was an email from Kevin Vogel to Lieutenant Rudy Escalante that said, hey, Rudy, how about we have undercover officers at their meeting.
Wait a minute. Are you suggesting that Kevin had forgotten that he sent that email to Rudy?
No, he actually commented about that. So what he said was, when I talked to him, I said, my question to him was, did you play any part in the decision to send undercover officers to the meeting? He said, I only suggested having undercover officers to Rudy. and he just kind of ran with it. Huh. I think that email you saw was on a Thursday and or Friday, and I didn't see the report until I came in on Monday.
You know, interesting enough, I have here at the studio, thanks to you, this thick packet of documents. I guess this is the entire deal, all 200 pages that you made available?
Yep.
I'm going to make a double-sided copy of this, and I'm going to put it in the public library, or I'm going to attempt to have it put in the public library for anybody who wants to see it. Now, a lot of these documents you've very graciously and I think helpfully posted online on Indie Bay. But in case people want to see all the pages that have been redacted with black ink and all that, they can go to the public library and take a look at it, too. And hopefully you're going to get a second set of documents. I know what Sherry Connable tried to get documents, and she was told there were no documents. Is that what happened?
No. Okay, so just a real quickie about the documents that you have and that you're going to place in the public library. Some interesting things. Another reason to call for a strong, independent, and actual independent investigation is that when you look at who was exchanging emails about the police infiltration, you see it was Kevin Vogel, Christine Lamas, whoever that is, Rudy Escalante, more Kevin Vogel, Colleen McCullough, who's a lieutenant, sort of at the same level as Rudy Escalante.
Colin McMahon, I think.
C. Cirillo. Oh, sorry.
Well, Cirillo is, of course, the czarina of the redevelopment agency.
Right. And then here's one even from our mayor, whoever that is.
Cynthia Two-Minute Matthews?
Yeah, Cynthia Two-Minute Matthews, Lee Sepulveda. So essentially it's all the people at the highest level in the police department were aware and were taking part in one way or another, were CC'd in the email chain. So who really would you ask for an independent investigation from the police department?
Well, you obviously wouldn't be anybody in the police department. My concern, even if you go outside the police department, is if the city manager, Dick Wilson, makes the choice, even if somebody comes from out of town, you got to be careful. But I think it could still be done if Madrigal's resolution, or whoever had the resolution, carefully hedged and made it clear that there were some parameters that Dick Wilson had to follow in choosing the independent investigator.
Correct.
And that was my concern. We're talking to Rico Thunder. If you want to call in, I got a question for Rico or for me. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM, in case you have a dial you can't read. Also, freakradio.org. The phone line is 469-3119, 469-3119. Rico's been generous enough to give us all of 40 minutes. Maybe he'll give us a few more minutes in hopes that somebody might want to call in if they got some questions.
So what you can expect to see with this incident is you'll see a passing of blame. And at each level, it gets just a little bit diluted. There's been several references by both police and now by the mayor in some emails that were exchanged and forwarded about that the city has no policy on undercover officers. So you'll see sort of like a sideways admission of that, well, maybe this wasn't the best thing, but now we have a policy, it'll totally be okay. And yes, the individual officers who did the infiltration maybe went a little bit too far. We've given them a very, very stern slap on the wrist. All of the other upper officers, the higher command within the police department, not being guided by policy, didn't do a single thing wrong. Then they might insert some very strong language, like they might have made better choices or something like that. So you'll see both a watering down of responsibility and a shifting of blame downward.
What?
And what will come out of it will be a policy that the sort of a very watered down policy crafted by the police department and by the city manager, no doubt. And the city council will be able to smile and point to that and talk about democracy well served.
Right. Now, what about the ACLU? And I mean, certainly there have been policies proposed by independent agencies concerned with civil liberties.
There have. There actually, San Francisco has a very good policy.
Maybe you could post that policy on Indie Bay.
I don't have it, but there are folks who have, and Sherry, for instance, has gotten a hold of that, and it would be great to see it. I think that what okay, so further actions. The ACLU, actually the police practices policy director of the ACLU got involved, and he has written to the police department to request the other, you know, three-quarters of the documents that were omitted and referenced within it but not actually included. And I think we want to see how extensive this is. I'm not sure I believe the assertions that it has never happened before. We want to see people actually held accountable, not at the bottom but at the top, including the city manager who did know about this. And we want to see not so much a policy, but we want to actually see an ordinance or a law come out of this, so that if you find a cop in your house while you're having a community meeting, it's more than just a violation of policy, it's a violation of the law.
Have you considered
that you can hold that person accountable in court?
Rico, good idea. Have you considered actually pressing for an initiative on this issue, since it's about as likely as snow in June that you're going to get the city council to do anything about an ordinance around this?
You're totally right, and yes, we have. So that's also an option available to us, mm-hmm. is an initiative that says we don't want cops in our home. We don't want cops at our meetings. If you want to find out, give us, you know, I told the city council that that big, giant police building that they built there on Cedar Street, I assume that it has telephone and internet service.
And indoor rifle range.
And they always can call groups if they have any questions. So once again, they might have an interest in something you're doing, but that doesn't give them a right to go snooping around. So another option that's available to us is if we find that we feel that the police have violated our civil rights, we will take them to court over it.
If
the city council wants to talk about cost savings and things like that, maybe having a strong ordinance might be a real cost savings for them.
Yeah, right.
In the end.
I think Dick Wilson would spend a lot of money to stop that kind of an ordinance from going into effect.
You can bet on it.
Yeah, but my question then would be, I mean, here, you know, you had 70-plus people, I'm told, at the January 10th meeting, but there were 7 or 8 or 9 of us at the January 24th meeting. Is this, Santa Cruz flake-a-rooney or Santa Cruz burnout?
There's two things happening here.
Uh-huh.
On one hand, the city council... I won't say the city council. The mayor, Cynthia Matthews, meets with department heads, and she opted to put Tony Madrigal's motion to ask for an independent investigation on the 3 o'clock agenda. So in case you didn't know, on the Tuesdays when the council meets, they pretty much meet all day, it seems. But there's a 3 o'clock session, which is in the afternoon, and then there's a later 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock. But, I mean, even at the 7 o'clock session after that, there was zero. I was the only person, I think, to show up to even refer to the issue that happened earlier that day. And, of course, the main deal was massive numbers of business people who were opposing the living wage ordinance. But
right.
I didn't see any of your supporters showing up as they had on January 10th at the oral communications period.
Well, that's what you'll see from the city council is... That's the reason why we wait for the results of the internal investigation, because then you can call for an independent investigation, and, of course, you don't take any action until that's done later. So like you said, way down in June, by that time, you know, the subject has been preempted by, you know, a new war in Iraq or Syria or North Korea or wherever,
uh-huh.
and it slowly falls off the plate as people's attentions as people get on with their lives. So... That's what you'll see is a game of stalling and policy and playing by the rules and so on.
What about those 70 people who were pissed? Are they still active?
They're still pissed, you know, but the thing is that...
Are there any people meeting? Is there any groups meeting who want to deal with this issue, or are people sort of waiting for nothing to happen?
There is. There's sort of an ad hoc people or an ad hoc group of people who are still irritated about this, who represent groups who frequently, you know, who devote themselves to free speech and anti-war agenda, and they want to make sure that, you know, there's not cops in their meetings.
You know this because people have held meetings, or they've just talked to you informally?
Emails. We're still burning up the wires.
Okay, because I'm apparently I have not been included in these lists, so I don't know what the heck is going down. Yeah, keep us advised. I appreciate, Rico, your being available, even though I don't see a massive outpouring of phone calls to Free Radio on this subject. Again, last chance, 469-3119. 469-3119. Talk about police surveillance. Get the word from the man who actually got the goods, or some of the goods, some of the preliminary goods from the police department and the city manager's office and the city council on, you know, who was peeking with a telescope through people's windows, you know, at peaceful protest in order to get lots of information. You
and
know.
If anybody wants to find out what's happening and figure out how to get involved, I guess you can write to me at Rico@thespoon.com.
Rico@thespoon.com.
Now, you know, I'm not heading any hoo-ha. There's lots of things to do in the world, all, you know, for peace and justice and so on. And, I mean, I want to, I don't know. I don't know. I want there not to be cops in our meetings. I want to know that we can do things that are radical in nature, maybe even frightening to the police, without having to contend with police infiltrators.
As do many of us. We've been talking with Rico Thunder. You can reach him at rico@thespoon.com. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you can also check out what's been going on to some extent, although I think all the commentary has been cut off Indie Bay, just the main stories, I'm not sure why, at indiebay.org.
And it'll continue there as well. So as we have updates, we'll keep on writing to Indie Bay.
Next city council meeting is going to be, I guess, the second Tuesday in February, which will be...
What is that?
Gosh, well, today is the second...
Okay, second Tuesday.
So it'll
be the 8th. Sorry.
Nope.
The 14th.
It'll be the, or the 15th even, right?
Is that
14th to the, one of the two, yeah.
Okay, so the, no, it looks like the 14th.
14th, okay. And then the day before that is going to be the Public
that.
Safety Committee's, what did you discover, oh, Kevin Vogel?
What's that?
They will be asking Kevin what he discovered on
Precisely.
February 13th.
Now, that'll be the important meeting. I know it's, not exactly very high profile. But
a meeting that is not posted. And, in fact, if you look at the city council bulletin board, not right outside the council chambers, but right outside the mayor's office, they will tell you instead the next public safety committee meeting is in late February. I went in and complained about that to Anna Brooks, and she said, we don't have to post it. And I said,
well, they don't have to, but we're going to be there.
Good.
And
maybe we
should
post
be there
it.
Too.
Yeah.
Because this is where, you know, this isn't just an opportunity to talk to the council. But this is where Deputy Chief Vogel will return the results of his internal investigation.
Right.
At which point he will actually have to explain to the council, and in oral communications it would be good to have the council ask him, why did you lead the internal investigation even though your name is on the email records suggesting the surveillance?
I'm sure there's a perfectly reasonable explanation.
Perfectly reasonable.
Rico, thank you for calling in, and thank you for giving us 50 minutes on this issue. If you got new updates, please get back to me. And if anybody has questions, again, rico@thespoon.com. And is there a phone number people can call? Or?
Well, we'll just stick with the email. I'm pretty good at checking it. So.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Robert, for having me on.
Hey, thank you,
thanks,
man.
Thanks to Free Radio.
Keep it up.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open in case you want to use the old number, 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. I'm going to give a couple of quick updates here. There's been some concerns about Tim Bratton, who is, I believe, a general manager of the Vets building. Tim has gotten a lot of flack, you may recall, in recent interviews. I promised I would get in touch with him to get his perspective on some of these issues. He declined to be interviewed, but he did talk to me on the phone and conveyed some information. First of all, he says the Vets Hall has a website, vetshall.com. You can go there. People have been concerned, apparently some, that Tim has been renting out areas of the Vets Hall without the permission of other vets organizations, that he has been... treating some employees badly. We've heard some complaints from some employees that he has sought restraining orders against some dissident vets, one of whom is in jail, Jim Purcell, another of whom I saw on the street, but he's still apparently been banned by a restraining order. He talks about, in this discussion I had with him this afternoon, he can give a list of the organizations who support him. He says 4,000 people walk into the vets hall every week, and they're mostly very happy and satisfied that things have improved over the 7 years of his tenure there. They don't arrest people lightly, the police department of Santa Cruz. When they do, that can happen. There are vets like Mark Gregory, was one name of a vet he mentioned, who's a big supporter of how he's been handling things there. I'm kind of trying to read my own notes. It's a little more difficult to do than I imagined. There is a meeting that people can go to next Monday if they are concerned about his management. It's at 9 o'clock in room 22, and they're invited to go, and they can always file complaints about him if they have concerns and problems with him. He says that there are always going to be a few disgruntled people, and that's the American way. That's how it is. You know, it's appropriate that you know, people, if some people are disgruntled, they have the right to be disgruntled. But he thinks most people are happy with his managership. The county sets up the vets hall for everybody's use, just preferential use by the vets. He doesn't want to be speaking publicly on this issue because he believes it'll be divisive. And when he went on a television program, he was attacked, and he didn't feel that was productive. He felt that Marty Wormhout and he, who are both on that program, apparently on community TV or something, looked at each other in astonishment that he was attacked. He felt that he found that very unusual. Skidmark Bob, who's a free radio broadcaster and a former worker at the Vets Hall, has been critical of Tim Bratton on this show, and he said that he was unaware that Skidmark Bob had been critical, and he was very surprised because he thought he and Bob had a very good relationship. I'm kind of running through my notes here best as I can. The county building has been owned by the county since 1932. He said in Chico, where there are other vets buildings throughout the state that are very badly managed, but that he's been able, through bringing in funding and through taking care of the building, to assist it and to really make it a much better building. Every member of the board of directors that supports him and will be meeting on next Monday is a vet. There's a directive from the board to keep the building solvent, which is what he's trying to do through renting out different rooms for different purposes, some of which are objected to by some vets, apparently. He says that Mr. Ricketts, who has a radio on the third floor, there was a controversy about that, about his having emergency broadcasting thing on the third floor, but that was all resolved, and in fact he's getting a new desk and new equipment and new antennas are going up, and I pointed out that was after apparently he'd been under some pressure to move, and he said yes, and that the petitions that were presented in opposition to a decision, which apparently I'm not sure whether Bratton had a major role in it or was simply part of that process, the initiatives to keep Ricketts in his room on the third floor and let him continue to do his broadcasting were successful. And he also denied a report, apparently, that was being investigated that he had drawn a weapon on a vet. There was a claim a question raised, had he pulled a gun on a vet, and he said, certainly not, never had. So that's some of the report from Tim Bratton. I apologize for not actually having his voice on the air. I'm just sort of consulting my notes. He declined to be interviewed. I asked him. I told him it would be, you know, much better and more persuasive. He's very well spoken. but he didn't choose to be interviewed. And of course, one can draw numerous conclusions. One can say, well, you know, he's in a position, high profile position. He doesn't really want to be interviewed on the subject. He'll because it gives malcontents or those who he regards as malcontents or perhaps minority people of a minority view too much publicity, and it, you know, it's like denying that you beat your wife or something. Perhaps on the other hand, he isn't going on record in a way that he can really be held accountable, because obviously all you have is my account of what he said to me on the phone today. So there is that to consider too. But I want to apologize for not trying to get Tim's response earlier to these matters. He was rather severely attacked on this issue, and he needed to have an opportunity to respond. He chose not to respond directly, but I simply am telling you what he told me. So that's the story from Tim Bratton of the Vets, manager of the Vets Hall. For those who want to carry the issue further, I guess the thing to do is to go to the board of directors meeting Monday at 9 or contact some of the critics who can often be found at the SAFE event, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, or Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, as I call the group, which had its, I guess, second year of shindig on Wednesday, yesterday, in front of the New Leaf Market, where they play and strum and drum and dance and serve soup and even give out literature every so often. And that's 2 years of challenging the downtown ordinances, the laws that criminalize most locations for street performers, almost all locations for sitting. There are places where you can legally sit. Most of the places where people are sitting with signs are completely illegal. And you might say, well, what a wonderful police department to allow people to sit in illegal places. No, no. The police department is just happy because they can do whatever they want with people, because they are essentially treating the sidewalks like their own personal property, since the city council has given them the power to declare people criminals. And it's like they're giving special privileges to people because the city council has removed everybody's rights. So instead of rights, you got this privileges bullshit. The downtown ordinances, which is supposedly to be reexamined by the Downtown Commission, have essentially gotten a pass from the Downtown Commission because the person examining the downtown ordinances, the person who was sent out on the streets to do all this investigative work, Jim Brown, I talked about this last show, who's on the Downtown Commission, didn't talk to any of the critics, really, or talked to very few of them. And I'm hoping, I spoke with human rights organization activist Bob Patton yesterday, the day before, and he's going to try to get in touch with Brown to give him the other side of the story, as one of our famous right-wing commentators likes to say, Paul Harvey. I'm going to play a few street interviews now, since you've been hearing me babble for about an hour and 15 minutes. It's time to hear somebody else. You'll hear more of me, but also some of other people. And what I'm going to play first is the second part of an interview with a guy whose companion was taken away by police, who had this long knife in a sheath, or bayonet in a sheath, which the police looked at but let him continue to keep. And he's talking about a number of issues sort of stemming from that.
So they have no objection to your fine, unconcealed weapon or unconcealed peanut butter knife or whatever it is.
I thought it was a beautiful piece of it's history. It's a World War I bayonet.
Uh-huh.
It's beautiful. In fact, I was throwing it in the park today, and it throws so nicely. And people were amazed because it's like, from here to the stop sign there, I was sticking a redwood tree dead center about head height.
Almost 30 feet or 20 feet, something like that.
Something like that. Also good at 10 feet or, well, whatever. I've got to get the rest of my weapons, because some of them are in the evidence locker here in Santa Cruz that I just need to get back out, and others are being held by the federal police up in Palo Alto because they're being assholes. I mean, I waited 3 days spending money in a motel room trying to get my knives back that they were holding in safe keeping while I was in the hospital, and I ended up getting.
How are you doing now? Are you physically all right?
Well, other than the fact that I got run over by a first alarm security truck in the middle of the night, and he hit and ran.
When was this?
let's see, it was about 12:15. I was heading for Lulu's to get some of their free giveaway food that they throw away at the end of the night. And I came up to the intersection coming across water, across the bridge, going down towards Lulu's. And a first alarm pickup truck pulled up to the intersection and stopped. So I went to go around behind him. And as I went to go around behind him, he threw the truck in reverse, backed up, hit me with his, I mean, it was wet, so his wheels were spinning. He hit me, knocked me down off my bicycle, and actually ran over the top of my bike, and then put it in drive and drove away. And
I think it was intentional or accidental?
I don't think he even realized that he hit me.
And again, and where was this?
It was at the corner of Water and River Street.
And when was this?
12:15, 15 minutes after midnight last night, and a taxi cab driver pulled up as he was pulling away. A taxi cab pulled up, a blue one,
uh-huh.
A guy with a funny looking old time hat. And, I mean, looked weird, you know. And I looked over, and his window was down, and I said, "Hey, stop that guy! He just ran me over." And the guy looked at me and looked back at the other guy, and I said, "Do something! Call a cop or something!" And he looked at me and he said, "Call first alarm," and he drove away. And I mean, you know, I check this out. I couldn't call the cops because, first off, I wasn't sure if I had a warrant or not yet. Obviously, I don't because they just ran my warrant, so I don't yet. But I could any time. And all my gear, my sleeping bag, was over at the courthouse in a dry spot because it was raining,
mm-hmm.
with my backpack and my drum inside, looking like me sleeping there, so that anybody that saw somebody sleeping there wouldn't hassle, like, stealing my shit.
They
wouldn't steal my sleeping bag because there's somebody sleeping in it. But I wasn't sleeping in my sleeping. I was out here getting run over by a fucking car. So I couldn't call the cops because, first off, my sleeping bag means that I'm trespassing over there.
And where was this?
At the courthouse. So it's like, I mean,
where?
My sleeping bag and everything was at the courthouse.
Courthouse.
In the front of the courthouse, there's a patio area on one of the mobile.
People used to sleep under there.
I do, because when it rains, I do. I got to get out of there in the middle of the night. I mean, it was 6 o'clock in the morning when
they're fencing off all the areas, like under the bridges. You can't sleep there anymore.
Yeah,
you know.
And I heard from what you said the other day, they're going to make it illegal to stay within a parking facility more.
We were able to stave that off today for at least another month, but we need to get together a lot of stats to fight it if we want to fight it.
Yeah, it's a marvelous thing trying to sleep in Santa Cruz, the city of the Lost Boys, where people run crazy on methamphetamine because they don't want to get caught sleeping at night.
Well, you know, we are trying to obey the law here. I mean, we're trying to be a law-abiding community. No sleeping after 11.
I'm a smoker, so, man, I'm always trying to find some place to hide to sleep at night.
Well, as long as you're doing it medicinally.
It's just medicinal. Hell, I don't have my card because I haven't gotten around to having the money to pay for the doctor to say I'm medicinal. But I've been a chronic back pain, had surgery. I've been disabled 10 years. I've had brain surgery. My psychiatrist would rather have me smoking pot than taking all the pills that I'm supposed to take that are bad for my liver.
Won't your psychiatrist write you a note? That's
no,
all you need.
No, because he can't do it. I've got to go through my neurologist. He referred me to go to a neurologist. I got to go through a neurologist and pain. What do they call it? Pain management doctors now.
Your psychiatrist, he can do it if he wants. He's choosing not to. I don't know why.
Works for the county.
Doesn't matter. County, actually, Emmeline is supposed to be a place where you can go and actually get a note if you're using marijuana for a medicinal purpose.
You need to go to Emmeline. I haven't gone to Emmeline.
You might try going to Greenway and getting her advice. You know, Lisa Milena, who runs the club out at Harvey West.
I don't even know where Harvey West is, but I've never actually made it to the park. All these years, I've never actually made it to the park.
It opened up this last summer. There's a club there. The prices, I understand, aren't any better than on the street, but she's, I believe, or others have said, Emmeline Street is a place to go. There's a particular doctor, too, but damned if I can remember his name at the moment, who will give you a recommendation if, in fact, you know, you find that marijuana has been helpful in medical conditions.
Well, I'm supposed to take all. I had a big old tumor, and I had it removed, and I'm supposed to take all these antidepressants. I'm supposed to take all these medicines that first off cause side effects, secondly might kill me, and thirdly are destroying my liver, and those don't manage my emotional levels as good as smoking a joint and just relaxing. And you're
obviously a criminal. I can spend no further time talking to you.
This is horrible.
You're beyond redemption. And here we are in front of a liquor store. Why don't you get a bottle of booze and relax?
No. See, I am a chocoholic. I live on chocolate.
Well, at least you have some positive aspect.
I smoke
chocolate, low-fat milk.
I smoke 1%. A little bit of pot, and I drink about a gallon and a half of chocolate milk a day, and that's why I'm such a criminal.
That's why you're such a good bayonet thrower.
For the last 10 months, I've lived in the forest, giving my friend, my rich millionaire friend, most of my money so he can take care of my 10-year-old son, which I've been single father since his...
This gets more and more tangled. I'm going to leave this before I get deeply involved here.
To the mother that killed his brother because I couldn't...
I'm out of here.
Couldn't find a house fast enough.
Thank you. And we've been talking with...
A dead man.
Thank you, dead man. Okay, we're talking to Mad Mike the Wonder Dog. It's about 10 to 9, and we're in front of this store. I don't even know what, Lotus? Fancy upscale clothing near the...
Fuck Polly!
Easy. Don't hurt the ears of our listeners. Right. So what's happening there, Mike?
Oh, it's just the cops are now beating the bushes again, looking for homeless people and stuff like that, and they forced me to go further in the valley of the shadow of death, while mountain lions and wild boar and stuff like that, so you can get the hell away from them. So you put your life in jeopardy. You can't even get a cell phone signal down there. And all this shit like this, you can't even dial 911. They fuck with people. But they got nothing better to do, you know, set a Homeland Security. Fuck George Bush, oh, by the way.
He's not that good looking.
Fuck the FCC. So what we got to do is we got Alito, we got, you know, all this shit, but us ultra-left-wing nuts.
Now focus on Santa Cruz. What's happening in Santa Cruz?
Oh, it's just, you know, they're just getting bored. Like, they just came down there. They're selling dope down there, whatever. There's child molesters running around there, fucking little boys in the ass, and rapists, and people doing armed robberies and shit like that. But they got to beat the bushes with the homeless. They got to fuck with people spare changing and lottering and hanging out. That's what they're doing right now. So we had to move away from there because it just came down there and made us
there
move
being,
away.
Where was there?
Yeah, they were just over there, right over there. And
there being?
The jails are all full, so, you know, because it's getting cold and everybody want to go in. But anyway, what I'm going to say is we need to masturbate and smash the fascist police state.
Thank you, Mad Mike. As usual, a typical conversation.
Right. There you go again.
There goes the police. Yes,
there
our favorite.
Again.
So we're here with mother, son, and cat. I should say a parrot. So what's happening, matey?
Not a whole lot. It's pretty quiet on the streets, except for a few stabbings and whatnots, but pretty quiet.
Now, speaking as an older woman who knows the streets, how would you characterize things?
Suck. It's pretty bad out here.
Worse than a year ago?
Yeah, definitely worse than a year ago.
They both agree on that. Now, why so?
Damien, you better.
Cops are getting a lot more ruder to us. They're getting a lot more physical and violent. Like, more of get off. Like, if you're waiting for a friend to get to the metro, they'll call cops on you. You can't wait for your friend at the metro anymore. If they're getting off the bus, you have to be either taking a bus or using their facilities. Or you can't just wait for your friend right there. They want you to go, and most of them are getting rude. The cops follow you everywhere you go. I get flagged down by the cops to come talk to them, and it's like, I don't have to talk to you. It's my legal right. I don't have to unless I am being pulled over for my ID being checked if I have a warrant. So I don't have to talk to you.
And that's, of course, what is their response when you do that?
They go, you still have to talk to us? I go, no, I don't. I can walk away right now. Unless I am doing a crime, you cannot pull me over and talk to me or do anything. So I can leave right now.
This is Santa Cruz, so we know that doesn't work.
What happens when you do that? I mean, do they harass you further, or do they sort of throw up their hands?
They harass me further. I had a cop look at my ID because it's out of state, and he goes, this is a fake ID. I go, can you read on my ID? You're calling in as a driver's license. It's a non-driver's license. It says right on my ID, driver identification card. Like a non-driver's license, identification card only, not a driver's license. And you're saying it's driver's license. That's why your computer system will not find a driver's license on me.
SCPD, police officer?
Santa Cruz police officer.
How long ago was this?
Like 4 days ago. And he's like, this is a fake ID. Are you giving me a lie? I'm like, no. I said, would you like to see my birth certificate, or do you think I stole that?
So, under what pretext was he IDing you for? Are you on probation or parole?
Warrants.
You don't have to show your ID for warrants.
No.
unless there's reasonable suspicion you have committed a crime, he can't even detain you. He has to have probable cause to arrest you, and he has no basis for talking to you unless he thinks you are in fact the vicious criminal that we know you are, of course.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I had Officer Wendy, she's like, I go, Wendy, you've seen my ID before. You know this is me. And she goes, yeah. I said, do you guys ever take classes to see how to do IDs or read different IDs? I said, there's a lot of people from out of states that come out of here, and you do arrest them. I'm sure you see the difference from driver's license to identification card. Can you read the difference, please?
So have you been able so far to be able at some point to say, don't want to talk to the officer, have a good day, walk on, and then ignore them and not be hassled further?
Nope.
So, I mean, the key to this, of course, is to keep walking.
Keep walking.
You know, and however, to say, turn and say, officer, if you're detaining me or arresting me, say so, otherwise I'm leaving. If you're detaining me, I have nothing to say. If you're arresting me, I want to know what charge.
Yeah.
It sounds easy, of course, from somebody who's, you know, I haven't got a house, but I've got a car, and I'm kind of living inside. I'm looking for a place to live, actually. But, hey, any comments from the parrot?
No comments from her. She don't like the cops. She looks at them, hisses them.
This is a parrot with a bell who looks surprisingly like a putty cat.
Yes, she is.
Any comments from you, good looking?
No, I'm fucking tired of this shit out here. You know, what needs to be said is all the new kids are coming in town need to follow the old school rules and not stop panhandling and asking women and children and elderly for money because that's getting a little out of hand. And yeah, and they all need to be put in their place. And I'm just...
So you don't blame the police, you blame the newcomers?
A lot of newcomers, yeah, newbies coming into town.
Again.
Yeah.
Only come in for half a second.
Yeah, they need to be put in their place because old school, you know.
We've been talking with
Pirate.
Thank you, Pirate.
Thank you so much.
And as usual, we have our Mickey Mouse episode. Actually, we actually are going to continue these interviews on the street. But first, before we do, here's an older interview from intrepid reporter Coral Brune, who was covering for me while I was away on vacation.
Not all as happy today as we are when we walk out of the Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. So take a hint. You know, the guy's great at making movies, and I want to encourage him, go back to making movies. Arnold Schwarzenegger, go back to making movies. You're a better actor than you are governor.
Yeah, quit taking our money away from us, because we really need it, you snake.
Well, that's very well put. Will that fit on your campaign brochure?
You can feel free to quote me, and my brochure is not yet finalized, so whether or not those exact words will be there is, you know, anybody's guess at the moment. But that general trend, yeah, that's my message. Sure.
Sounding sharp. Anything else more that you'd like to fill us in on?
Everything's happening. We're all part of it. Even though it's early in the year, many things are happening right now. And generally, election years are more productive than other years just because there's things happening. So I encourage everyone, stay tuned. What's happening in your own neighborhood? What's happening in your city? Get involved. Help make it come out right. If we all work together, we can help make tomorrow's news better than it would otherwise been if we didn't do nothing about it. Don't just sit by and watch events happen. Get involved and make better events happen so that tomorrow's news will be better than it would otherwise have been. Cooperate with your neighbor. Cooperate with your friends. Cooperate with your own family. Cooperate with yourself.
Okay, I'm for that. Action is everything.
It is.
Same advice.
Don't ever believe you can't do it. Just in case there's any truth at all to the power of suggestion, be an optimist. I can't even imagine how a pessimist could hope to be right. So whatever it is, go for it.
Right on. Thank you. Roger. Nobody. Anybody?
D. Roger, etc.
Thank you. Coral FRSC. How's your year been going, Ozark?
Off the charts successful.
Sounds pretty good. Full power.
Yeah, coming into the home stretch. Life gets better and better as you get older and older.
Good. because you all seem to enjoy this night tonight. Christmas lights are still up on the street. Guess we're feeling it all year long.
Each day is a gift.
So it is.
It's a good show in town. Look at the vibes here tonight. This is so much love, so much harmony, so much family, so much healing. This is a spiritual happening. Just joy. Just joy here.
Thank you. Hope you enjoy it every week, every day. Okay, what's going on, drummer man?
Dallas, I mean, in 2 weeks, but January 25th, and we play all original songs, play with Lifehouse up in Maine. They're probably coming here in a couple months. We recorded 20 tracks, about 30 songs they do, and I went and saw Montrose at the Callus, and we'll make $400 or $500 a piece for the Callus.
Hey man, well, what's going on for you for this new year since you got back to town? Is anything good or is it looking kind of weird?
No, it's looking really good. It looks like we're for the rocking industry.
Yeah.
Rocking industry.
Hey, that sounds good.
And I don't want to have a stack of paper, get some fucking silver and gold, man. Hand me a stack of papers.
Okay. Well. Yeah.
What'd you say?
She said.
And that is indeed Safe. You can check them out on Wednesday nights, and they're also in bits and pieces on the street at other times. If you want to leave a message for Safe, you can call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Some folks who are not actually official members of Safe, but who are sympathetic, like Brandon the cellist, and other musicians are up and down the avenue. Frankly, I think one of the purposes of Safe, which was to support folks struggling to perform in public spaces but harassed under the city's anti-homeless merchant-initiated downtown ordinances, well, they need to get together. And you can see this, here's an instance of it. A couple days ago, Brandon the cellist was hauled away in handcuffs, and here's a little of that scene, which I recorded because I happened to come upon it just about the time it happened. This is right in front of New Leaf Market. Brandon was playing in his usual spot, which is right next to the corner, right on the other side of the kiosk. And police officers came up, and this is what happened.
Take care.
Okay. So it's about 5 to 4. We're here at the Alfresco's. Two police officers, a sergeant, and an officer. Officer Klein is apparently saying that Brandon here.
You got cited out on it.
I forgot.
Did I get cited? Can you issue me something? Another ticket or something?
What?
I want to see it.
Go ahead and lay your cello.
You're going to arrest me? I haven't done anything, dude.
You
have one. I don't know, man.
Okay. Your cello and we'll go, okay?
Where are you guys going?
259 Water Street.
That's the jail.
It's not up there.
Musician under arrest downtown. Check it out. Cello player is being taken into custody by the police.
To watch it.
Yeah, dude.
Your Santa Cruz laws at work. Police officers taking a cello player away. Right here. In handcuffs, folks.
What do you do?
That's Mayor Matthews' downtown ordinances. He has a warrant for having an open guitar case. I think a second warrant for sitting on the riverbank.
Yeah, well, apparently I was late on my ticket, and now they're arresting me.
Here, I'll take the cello.
I said $4,000 instrument. Okay, you want her to take the cello? Yeah.
And the officer allows the woman to take the cello. Anything you want to say, Brandon?
Well, yeah, I think this is unreasonable.
Talking to you. Would you like her to take your chair as well?
Yeah, I'd have her take my chair.
Take it off.
Rothy, you know where the station is, don't you?
Yeah.
259 Water Street, is that right?
Keep playing.
Cello player under arrest downtown, folks.
That's a shame.
For a ticket.
That's a shame.
But the officers are smiling. It's all in a day's work. He's got a grin on his face and a cello player in custody, folks, downtown. Santa Cruz's Downtown Association's downtown ordinances at work. Taken to jail, that cello player, the man of crime. I could be a lot better, Sergeant. Sergeant Lamas is taking a man into custody here, as is Officer Klein.
Robert?
Yo.
Can you meet me down at the jail? You get some people down there?
They're not going to release here for 4 or 5 hours, probably. We'd be hanging out for 4 or 5 hours.
Okay. You think you could do that, man? I'm a little weirded out.
I can't come in. I'll just be standing outside the jail if I do that. See, that's the problem. Cello player under arrest here in Santa Cruz. Mayor Matthews' downtown laws against street performers. They're making sure he doesn't have a dangerous piccolo in his pocket here.
Or a knife.
Or a Swiss Army knife. Pretty dangerous stuff.
Well, you guys are the ones with guns. Shit. All for a ticket, guys. A non-violent offense.
Ticket was for open guitar case.
I believe it was. It was for putting a cello case out in the street, and now they're taking me to jail. What a load of crap!
Police department is being paid with your taxpayer dollars, taking a musician to jail under the downtown ordinances. These are the laws that Councilmember Rotkin tells you are protection downtown, protection against cello players. I'm glad we're being given this kind of service here downtown.
You're welcome, Robert.
And of course, the police are happy about it, but I'm not. And I wonder if these citizens are happy about it. There's a happy person. You glad that they're arresting a cello player, ma'am?
I'm totally stoked.
All right. Well, that's good. We got somebody who's excited about that. What do you think, sir?
How do you guys like the show? I think it's kind of ridiculous. I think that this is exactly the sort of thing that we need to stop encouraging in Santa Cruz. It's utterly ridiculous.
And what's your name?
Quentin Brady.
Thank you, Quentin.
And I'm sorry. Is there someone I can contact? Some sort of local city councilman or something?
You can call 420-5020.
Okay, I will certainly do that.
You can do that now, actually.
Absolutely outrageous.
Right.
This is outrageous.
Any comment? No.
Okay. All right. Any comments, sir, about this latest example of police power in Santa Cruz?
Well, I think it's about as far gone as it can get. I mean, you take a cello player away, my goodness. Let's do away with all culture. It's a pollutant, you know.
He was violating the downtown ordinances. He had an open guitar case in the wrong place.
An open guitar case?
That's correct.
Open cello case, actually.
Oh, I better go home.
But luckily, we have some citizens who appreciate the police and arresting musicians. Madam, are you proud? Let's speak up for our police.
Go ahead.
Absolutely proud.
She's absolutely proud.
I'm getting off the street before I get arrested for being dressed.
At least the well-dressed women are absolutely proud. That's good. Streets are safe for her child with the cello player gone. Well done, madam.
He's had a bad attitude.
He's a cello player.
One time I gave him a flower, you know what he did? He stood up and threw it in my face.
That's silly. How's it going, dude?
Oh, pretty good.
Good. Well, Marilyn, about frescoes, are you glad that a cello player has finally been removed? Is he having given you problems down here?
I don't think that was the issue.
What was the issue?
I don't know. Evidently, he had a ticket that he didn't pay, but...
For an open guitar case.
Was that it?
Yeah.
An open cello case.
That's too bad they don't have anything better to do, but...
It's too bad the Downtown Association supports that kind of stuff and created those laws, right?
I don't know.
That's my view. I don't know if that's your view or not.
It's very sporadic how they are enforced.
Arbitrary and capricious, perhaps?
Yeah.
Anything else happening downtown that might attract our interest or people should know about?
I don't think so.
You can only attract, arrest one cello player a day, I guess. I mean, there aren't that many cello players down here.
Right. He can't do anything wrong. He has to do everything exactly right. Everyone else can flaunt the rules, but he can't.
Right.
Thank you, Marilyn. You know, you could be accused of being sympathetic to terrorist cello players. I hope you realize that. Our police department is just trying to enforce the law, you understand.
Yeah, but they're just enforcing it against certain people and not others. I'd like to point out, but I won't.
Well, if you decide you wish to come clean, I want you to let us know.
Okay.
Hey.
Thank you for the update. So it's now about 4:05 on Sunday afternoon. And earlier, probably dapping around 4:05. Yes. Sue playing here in front of the borders. We're talking to a man who knows tickets in a Dennis Kucinich t-shirt. Your name, sir?
My name is Brent Adams. I play a 55-gallon plastic barrel downtown. Thank you.
And Brent, you're conferring here with a couple of ne'er-do-wells about the issue of this questionable cello player.
Hey, I take offense to that.
Yes, naturally.
Once in a while I do right.
That's correct. Occasionally do wells, seldom do wells. And you know this cello player terrorist. Is he finally being taken in and getting his just deserts?
Yeah, he was handcuffed. The cello player was handcuffed and taken away in a squad car.
Well, yeah. I mean, but he wasn't paying his debt to society. He had an outstanding citation, so why shouldn't they take him away? There was a warrant issued, right?
Yeah, I know a lot about this because I've had a lot of warrants. Actually, I have a warrant right now, although I dealt with it.
Over here.
I had a ticket for a bike light, the lack of a bike light, so they wrote me a ticket, and then I had it signed off, and I lost the ticket, so... Then they sent me a warrant in the mail because I didn't deal with it in the due time that I was actually, I was giving fair warning to deal with it. So now I have, they gave me a warrant, which I'm a street performer and they know my name, so it's not safe for me to be out here. So I have to go deal with it. I went and got a court date, which I guess the cello player, pardon me, his name is Brandon, we all love him very much. He didn't take care of his ticket. And
it was his fault.
I'm not saying that the ticket was his fault.
I would have to say that the man had an opportunity to pay his debt, and what did he do? Oh-ho! He played the cello instead. What's the matter with this man?
He's irresponsible.
Irresponsible.
Yeah. I am. I think he's a great guy. I don't think he's... I don't have anything to comment about his nature, his personality. He's a great guy. But Yeah, when you get a ticket. We've got to deal with our tickets. Some of these tickets, like, I shouldn't have got that bike light ticket. I had a bike light at home. She gave me a verbal warning. I was on my way home. Anyway, but we know, if we know what the laws are, we get tickets. We have to deal with them. If we're going to be out here being creative, let's try to be as clean as we can. Now, I think the law that he got ticketed on, or the charge was probably totally bullshit. That's what I think. I'm sure that it was a bullshit charge.
Walking the sidewalk.
He said that
so they got him on the warrant.
That it has something to do with an open case and in a walkway, which is, you know, stupid. He's a seasoned professional out here. He definitely knows the rules and stays within his guidelines.
Well, I don't want to hear you criticizing Sergeant Lamas or Officer Klein for their attempt to maintain the passageway that individuals trying to get to and from the stores, which after all are the main business down here, are free. And as one woman and her child said, congratulations, Sergeant Lamas.
Really? That's horrible. Brandon is a treasure around here. We've got to give him our support. Brandon, take care of your warrants, buddy.
And we've been talking with...
My name is Brent Adams. I play 55-gallon plastic barrel downtown.
And no doubt we'll soon be, should we say, in custody.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna show up in court. I actually have no outstanding warrants, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much.
So you're in an unwarranted situation.
Yeah, that's why I was able to say a smart-ass thing to the cop just now.
Which you said was...
I gave him a dirty look. And he goes, what, you have a question? And I said, what'd you do with the cello player? And he said, he had a warrant. And I was like, oh.
That explains everything. Take him away, boy. And Jackson's Shoes is now an empty storefront. That's the store from whence came Candy Jackson, who gave us the initial impetus in 2002 for the downtown ordinances that I would say an expanded version. Well, it may have been a law under which Brandon was cited and now arrested for not taking care of the warrant, or possibly we're thinking of an earlier law. But that law has produced numerous warrants. Guitar artist, your name, sir?
Guitar Joe.
Yeah. Senor Joe, here you are in front of the Lucky brand jeans. Any commentary from the police officers or the public you wish to pass on to the free radio folks?
Actually, I don't at the moment. I'm just kind of like I'm a little blown away about the cello player. But what was the charge?
He was being taken in on a warrant for, I believe it was at least one unpaid citation for having an open display device either within 10 feet of a building or else obstructing the sidewalk. I actually saw him being cited about a month and a half ago, and it didn't look like a particularly valid citation to me.
Oh, no. Well, that's... you got to really watch it out here, I guess, as far as zoning goes. I know they've warned me a couple times, and I just make sure I'm 10 feet from a building, I guess. It's the only one thing I can do to be legal. It's kind of sad, though, because here we have just, insanely good, talented individuals, that just add so much light to the town. And without them, you're just darkening the town, and it's hopefully we'll, keep on. I mean, like, I've been busted, same thing, and I just keep on going. That's all we can do.
Now, the Downtown Commission has supposedly been asking musicians about whether they feel the downtown ordinances, some of which, I guess, Brandon has run afoul of, or one of which anyway, are too restrictive. Has anybody come and asked you that question?
Not particularly, no.
Okay, just checking that out. Again, we've been talking with
Guitar Joe.
Perhaps a taste of your music, Guitar Joe.
We're gonna party till the rooster crows. We're gonna party till the cow come home, let her roll. Get on your ball, business life. Get on the wheel and have a good time. On your shoes, gonna dance all night. Everything's rockin', gonna be alright. We gonna party till the rooster crows. We're gonna party till the cows come home, lay the rope.
We're talking to with Chocolate Cruncher Valerie Promise. Valerie, what you've heard already about Brandon.
Thank you.
Wow, amazing. Getting some money from, I guess you're in front of Gelatomania.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, what's your take on the Brandon arrest? Finally, the celloist is getting his just desserts. What do you think?
Of course not. I'm outraged. I think we should all go protest. This is a ridiculous and petty waste of resources.
He did ask us to come to the jail, and I told him we didn't know when he'd be released. We might be standing there for 5 hours. Of course, we could, I guess, but it's kind of a cold winter
party.
Night. Aha, man with the musician on the lawn. Sorry, sir, you're under arrest.
Thank you.
Yes, your name, sir?
Thank you. My name is under arrest.
Yes. Under arrest. So you arrest, eh?
And you kind sir are also in turn then under arrest.
Oh, fine. Everyone's going to get arrested downtown. You heard about the cello players finally being taken into custody?
No, but at least the local gendarmes are outmanned and outgunned in order to keep corruption down.
Well, and what kind of an instrument do you play in your fight for freedom here in Santa Cruz?
It's an unplugged electric bass. There are no pickups in it presently.
I see. So you don't pick anybody up with this one?
No, not unless they're feeling really down.
I see. Well, you never can tell. We've been talking with?
Variously designated.
Variously designated. Thank you, VD.
No worries.
And we're almost at the end of Bathurst Pier's broadsides. Brandon has been released. However, he was released only because bail was raised. This is according to what I heard secondhand. I've not yet been able to interview him directly, though I understand he was playing downtown today. I heard from Marilyn of Alfrescos, whom you heard earlier interviewed on the show, that Brandon had been told he would be held in custody for a month until his trial. But some people raised bail for him. So the cello criminal is back on the street again, probably up to his old tricks, having his cello case opened for donations and other questionable behaviors downtown. Have you got some problems about these fine laws under which police are exercising their discretionary authority? You can give a call to Cynthia Matthews, or 2 Minute Matthews, as I call our mayor, 420-5020. That's the number. It's actually a number you can call right now, 420-5020, and ask her to get back to you. Why not? Let's hear a little more, and then I'm afraid it's going to be bye-bye time for Bathurst Spears Broadsides. I'll be back on Sunday morning at 9:30 with more interviews and outrage.
And do you have any comments here, Miss Chocolate? Oh, not a word, but she's distributing questionable chocolate to street performers. I'm not going to reveal her identity at this time, but I'm keeping a close watch on the situation. Mm-hmm. We're talking with
Michelle Belfils.
And Michelle, what's happening?
About a week and a half ago, I went over to River Street Shelter, where they have the shelter, and asked if I could come in out of the cold. Because I felt like I felt very ill. They said, no, you have to sign in and check in every day. The place was half empty and they had plenty of room.
Talking about the River Street shelter, not the family shelter, not Page Smith Community House, and not the Homeless Service Center, right?
Correct.
Just clarifying.
About an hour and a half later, I fell out and I ended up having pneumonia. I was stuck at the corner, Ocean Highway 1, all night and couldn't even move. My brand new bicycle almost got stolen. Had it not been for a good friend of mine who came by, hell, I probably would have been dead. Finally, someone called an ambulance just because these people wouldn't let me come in out of the cold. An older gentleman, I guess about a week and a half ago, just died because Marcus Banulos.
He's the manager of the, or what is his position?
He's the director of the homeless shelter and everything there, and he's really giving me a hard time. I can't even get a locker. One of his employees stole for me. It's just terrible. Every time I go to the shelter, I get nothing but harassment. I've been robbed 3 times since I've been over there, and all I'm trying to do is, get a little assistance.
Now, when was the last time you used their services?
Oh, it's been a long, long time. And
you don't go over there for the meals, or?
No, once in a blue moon. Once in a blue moon, I check my mail once in a while.
I was trying. A locker there? Or?
I was trying to ask about a locker, but the person who works in the mailroom, he just looks at you. They're just belligerent, irate, and just an ugly attitude. Marcus and the site manager, Shannon, she goes, oh, just get away from me. And she tells me I have to stay out of there for a day just because she doesn't like me, she decided. She let my ex-boyfriend, by his words saying that I gave permission to get in my locker, into my locker, he took my ATM card. I'm trying to access my checking account. I've lost my ATM all ripped. You know, my whole checking account screwed up. She breached the direct court order, and then she throws me off the shelter site when I try to ask her about
it. You complain to shelter director Ken Cole? Or?
No, they won't even let you get near Ken Cole. I haven't seen him in so long. And Marcus, he just stands there looking at me like I'm high on drugs or something, when in fact I'm just, you know, completely frustrated and distraught, and I just don't know what to do.
We've been talking with?
Michelle Belfils.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Well, well, here with the infamous John Maurer, and then an anomalous person to our right who's feeding the pigeons, it appears to be. Oh, yes. And, John, you have a sign inside a pizza box, empty pizza box, unwanted pennies and others. Thank you. How's the pickings?
I'm not sure what's going on with the tickets. Last time I knew, there's a...
No, the pickings, not the tickets.
Oh, the pickings. Okay.
I know you are, of course, the famous John Maurer, who's been twice featured in the Good Times. Has been a.
I haven't seen it.
Oh yeah.
Actually, three times.
Three times, amazing.
Yeah, three times in the paper.
Really, in the Good Times or?
Good Times. Yeah, I remember that woman did it once.
I just noticed when I index you into the Good Times, I get two stories. But again, that's for 2005. I think there was an early one in 2003.
There's a new story now out there.
But you are, in fact, a man who had a sign in his hat, a fuck the pigs, parentheses, police,
yes.
After you were harassed by Officer Pam Bechtel in front of the Palomar, correct?
Right, yes,
and,
I am.
And you are back on the street sitting on public property, panhandling. That's illegal, I might point out.
This is my public property, too.
Ah, you see, what are you suggesting? You have a role in this, Mr. Poor Guy?
Yeah, I do.
Your name, madam?
Judy Moore. I prefer iron skillets myself.
Iron. She prefers iron skillets to panhandling. Oh, boy, the wit on the street is incredible. What can I tell you, folks? It's got us all rolling in the sidewalk.
Yeah.
What do you think of this individual engaging in questionable soliciting activities here near the very bookshop Santa Cruz that actually, whose owner initiated these laws 12 years ago?
Oh, I'm sorry?
Well, so am I. That's one of the problems here. But being sorry doesn't do any
pigeons.
Good. You were feeding the pigeons.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm feeding the pigeons.
Mm, indeed.
You interrupted my thought.
Well, get back to that pigeon feeding.
The pigeons.
You need
the
Wow. And
they're tattoos.
I think they're appreciating your feeding. John, anything happening on the streets? You know the cello player has been taken away in handcuffs, right?
No,
happened about 20 minutes ago.
You're
yeah.
Kidding.
Why?
Unpaid ticket or tickets. One of them, at least, involving a open display cello case for the purpose of soliciting money on the sidewalk.
Will he have to give up his cello to pay for his tickets?
Well, luckily, a person with him took the cello. The officer reluctantly surrendered the cello to a bystander, and it was taken into custody by the bystander.
By sexual standard or by what?
I wasn't sure of her sexual preference. I didn't go into it with her at the time. Well, perhaps that would have been a good idea. That's another story.
Well, bystander, I was, you know, lots. There's all kinds of diversified people that stand.
Indeed.
If you're narrowing it down to bystanders, I think that's kind of...
I say by Santa Cruz, not by standards in any case. We'll leave this particular tangle for the listeners to untangle. Any other comments, John, about your current lifestyle? And here's your old stomping ground, the hot dog kiosk.
Yes, I'm not sure what's happening with the tickets right now. I think they've gone through... new ordinance or the ordinance has been read once.
Are you talking about the new potential law that changes the law under which you were arrested 2 years or 3 years ago now, right?
Yeah, it was 3 years ago in 2003. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the ordinance of the First Amendment laws about free speech.
The First Amendment will have to wait. Music has arrived in the studio from the cream to the dregs. And in order to bring this into its proper flower, here's a little Carole King to introduce the whole situation.
Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. I'm your Uncle Dennis, the one your mother warned you about, here with another Thursday night broadcast of music news, a mystery group coming up at 10 o'clock, all kinds of stuff going on. The only thing I don't do is have something queued up. Anyway, let's try this. Let's try queuing this up. Anyway, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org. And, of course, where else on the dial can you find exactly what we've got going here? Almost 11 years. I can't believe it. In another month, it'll be 11 years. What can I say? I haven't been here all 11 years. I've only been here 10 years myself. But, you know, that's how things go. Anyway, let's get started tonight with an exploration of the music of the 60s and 70s with this live. Is this live? I can't remember. Yes, this was recorded live in the KQED studios in San Francisco on April 25th, 1967.